ask the members to introduce themselves. I know they can introduce themselves and tell you who they are, but by the time they finish, we forget all of them. But I'll keep on mentioning their names so that you can remember asking the question. And after that, then you can present, you can tell us who you are, and then in our stage of presentation. I'm going to ask with the next to me to tell you who she is, and we go down the line. Now, for foreign people that are here, I'm going to take her out and she doesn't belong to her. I can say to her, I'm going to vote her out, but she can tell us who she is. Okay.
My name is Desmond Gardner, and I'm currently responsible for National Research Foundation being a funding body supporting research broadly. And I want to unique about us. The CSIR is the only council of the councils in this state that is multi-sector. So we've been given a mandate that has got a lot of freedom to play, or freedom of operation, so to speak. We've been tasked with developing technology and innovation in sectors that we think are important to really improve the lives of the people. But most importantly, scientific and industrial research is something that they really, really have mandated us to focus on. So that's the distinction that I just wanted to put in place. And the reason why I emphasize this point is that people often ask us, the MRC works in health. What is it that the CSIR does in the same space that the MRC works? And ours is to take the broader technology base, and I will speak to the breadth of our technologies and say, can we harness them to support the work of the MRC? So it is not a competition for what we have done in health. And in fact, if we had more time, we could speak more to the complementarity of what it is that we have. When they go in and they are studying disease and disease spread and looking for, doing clinical trials, looking for, you know, medicines that work and things like that, we provide technologies that improve the kind of things that we do. For example, from a medical perspective, they might be having content that they are wanting to collect in terms of disease spread. How can we bring ICT technology to support those kinds of issues? They might be testing medicines, for example. We have technologies that make drug delivery, for example, more effective. They are working with patients and people and trying to characterize disease and disease trends. And we're saying, how can we devise technologies and infrastructure, for example, that make them more efficient, that make the health system more efficient at what it does, control disease spread, and so on and so forth. When I go to specific examples, I hope you can start to see the distinction, but perhaps more importantly, the complementarity that exists between us, ourselves, in this particular case, in the Medical Research Council. But it goes more broader than that, because we also do work and provide technology that support work in agriculture, and technology that could support the Council for Geosciences and Research and so on. In terms of who we are and where we are, it is a very large organization, at least in South African terms. We are about 2,400 strong, and of these 2,360 to 400 people, we have about 1,500 are in the science, engineering, and technology space, which means it's a core of people with a certain technical competence. Most of our people have got engineering degrees. Many of them have got master's degrees. I think about 400 people have got master's degrees, and about 300 people have got PhDs. So we're looking at a concentration of about 700 people with postgraduate education in science and engineering. So that speaks to the kind of capacity that we have in terms of the technical basis that is at the disposal of government in public. And our largest campus is in Pretoria, obviously, that's where our central office is at. But we do have offices across the country in Pietermaritzburg, in Devon, in Port Elizabeth, in Stellenbosch, and in Cape Town. In terms of, to give you an impression of the amount of work that we do, we receive about R500 million as parliamentary grants through our land department, which is the Department of Science and Technology. But we get about R1.2 billion from industry and other departments to implement contract work. The fact that we work in R1.2 billion worth of our work is contract work, particularly in the public sector, speaks to how we already endeavoring to go out there and work with the department and respond and give them technical support, provide them technology solutions, and in many cases it is thought leadership and critique of policies and technologies that they might be wanting to bring in or to establish on the basis of our science, engineering, and technology. In terms of the kinds of things that we are proud of, we have some of the top scientists in the world work for the CSIR. As an example, Professor Suprakash Sinaray is one of the top 50 chemists globally, and he's the only one that is ranked in the top 50 globally within Africa, and he's received award. We won the Achievers Award in our State of Logistics. It's an initiative that we do annually where we provide information on logistics to the Department of Transport, but indeed to many other agencies that are interested in logistics. Some of our charismatic, simple innovations, they've won recognition internationally. For example, I will speak more to what we call the digital doorway, a technology to provide computer access to remote rural areas that we have evolved into a drum. It's a solid drum that is cut off and mobilized and put in a computer there in a public place. But it's so secure that people cannot come to that. My colleague can speak more to that a little bit later. But people can come and interact with the computer, children, elderly, interact with the internet, and then go away without damaging it. I will show you the distribution of this technology. The Time Magazine has ranked this technology one of the top 50 innovations of 2019, which speaks to the kind of recognition that we have internationally. We've also been awarded the Best Employer status by the Corporate Research Foundation. We take care of our people. We've got this award for 2010 and for 2011, and we hope we can continue to maintain this status. We are also listed as one of the world's top science and technology think tanks by a US-based company that ranks think tanks. So the world as such recognizes us as a potential, as a powerhouse we have in terms of top leadership. And perhaps this is not necessarily the case locally here in our own country, because perhaps we've not put as much effort as we ought to make it known what our capacities are and what it is that we do, and therefore people can start to understand how it is that we can work together to support the programs and initiatives that we have. In terms of what we do, I indicated already that we work in the space of science, technology and innovation, practically trying to direct technology and technology applications and translate them into solutions that are relevant to ordinary people. I want now to speak to what informs what it is that we do. A lot of it is stakeholder engagement. And what we're doing here today is stakeholder engagement. We hope it's a two-way street where we tell you about what it is that we can do and what our potential is. But perhaps we listen to you and we understand what it is your priorities are, and therefore how can we then begin to reform. So I want to speak to what we do and what informs it, and I will speak only to a few of the things that I think are relevant. We respond very much to the Millennium Development Goals, to the 12 outcomes of governance, to now we have recently received the evolution of the National Development Plan, the Vision 2030 document from the National Planning Commission is now in our hands for us to critique, comment and add value to. There are issues that they highlight as important for the realization of the national vision going forward into the future. And how are we as an organization responding to some of those things? We listen to the State of the Nation address. We understand the infrastructure drive that is contained within the vision of the leadership of the country, within the president's vision. We listen to issues of adding value to our industry, to our raw materials, in, for example, value addition and beneficiation, to the titanium industry. How are we behaving in terms of responding to those kinds of challenges and imperatives put in front of us by the nation's leaders? Basically, how we have decided to focus our work and our capacity in our muscle is on six areas. And these are the six areas that are highlighted. We focus on the natural environment. We focus on the built environment. We focus on industry, and in industry we look at advanced manufacturing. This is the space in which we do beneficiation and value addition to our mineral-based raw materials, and titanium is a case in point. We also look at advanced in manufacturing. We also look at industry in terms of mining. So there is advanced manufacturing and mining. Those are the two key areas there. We have a very strong, and in fact by far the largest capability that the CSIR has, lies in the space of defense and security. And what is particularly interesting to us is how the technologies that were developed in the context of defense and in fact in the earlier years in the evolution of the organization for a warfare approach are now being handled in a very peaceful fashion, and some of the technologies can be applied to support the security cluster, and I will speak to one of the initiatives there. And as some of the technologies can be reduced, something very simple to do with monitoring people and activity in the Kruger National Park, for example. We have such technologies that can monitor and look very, very closely to see is that person, the person that's supposed to be there, are they holding a rifle? Is it something that's a threat, or is it a game ranger that was mentioned? So originally these technologies were a war situation, but they are now being harnessed for a more peaceful and security situation. I could speak more to those technologies. We work in energy, but I think the area that is of interest to this committee particularly is the work that we do in Zimbabwe. I will, and I think from that result, and yes, it's about hurry up and tell us about health already. Okay. So with that, I would like to really do a quick slide pass in terms of what we do. And before I go there, I just want to emphasize the bar that appears on the left side of the slide. The enabling technology. We have very strong competencies in smart materials, in sensors, in photonics, in robotics, in ICT, in modeling and digital sciences, and we've got research infrastructure and facilities that reside at the CSIR, but is as well available to others in the National System of Innovation. So these technologies on the right, on the left, are what underpins our activity in the spaces that we have. I spoke already to our competence in radar technology and integrated sensors, and how we are deploying these technologies for situational awareness. For example, we deployed these technologies during the World Cup to monitor the airspace above the stadium to see if there were any threats around there, and we supported the police, the Department of Defense, and the Air Force with those particular technologies. These technologies can be deployed for border control as well, looking to monitor our borders from above, looking into our water spaces and seeing if there is any infringement or any threat, and so on and so forth. So we can constantly monitor the environment. You can imagine how this particular continuous monitoring can be used in the setting of a security system to just be nationally aware of what is going on, given the rate of crime that we have within the country. We work in sensors. Some of our technologies are looking at, given the challenges of derailment that we see due to cracks in the railway line, our changing sensor technologies are such that we've developed sensors that can detect cracks in railway lines way before they develop. And Transnet is already deploying these sensors, and Transnet is deploying these sensors already preemptively, work proactively to fix these cracks before any derailment, costly derailments are put in place. In fact, we had a Chinese delegation coming to us. They are very keen to license this technology. And internationally, where they have high-speed trains, heavy haul routes, and metros, they are coming to the CSIR from overseas to say, how can we use this technology? In additive manufacturing, we use lasers to add value to titanium in response directly to the kinds of beneficiation requests that have been put on the table as part of the State of the Nation addressed by the President. And we do work with Airbus and Boeing to develop components of aircraft that they can use. This is happening in our own backyard, but we don't think that our own people actually know that we've got capacity that is attractive to industrial giants such as Airbus and Boeing. Sensors also monitoring the environment. We have robotic boys that we deploy ubiquitously. They can tell us what is happening in terms of the quality of water, in terms of the changes that are happening, in terms of flashes of algal blooms that are changing environmentally. We've got technology that has been developed at the CSIR that helps us to monitor and inform and advise policymakers on that. We do the same in the space of the environment, monitoring the water, freshwater ecosystems, the terrestrial ecosystems, and constantly updating and informing departments such as water assets and the natural environment. were hit very hard by crime and violent accidents and crime. We are hit very hard by respiratory infections, and increasingly chronic diseases are beginning to become more and more of a problem in South Africa. Of particular importance is the fact that when you look at investment in health that South Africa puts as a proportion of the GDP, it is quite comparable to other developed countries in the Middle East. And yet we find ourselves ranked so low in terms of the life expectancy, which speaks to, it's not about us not putting money towards the problem, but something is broken within the system so that we cannot realize the benefit of the amount of money that we are pouring into the system. So that is the challenge that we face. And we've tried from a technology perspective to interrogate that and say, what therefore is it that the CSR can do? And lastly, we want to, we are playing with the other members of the group. We want to play with people like India. Look at their life expectancy, it's way up. People like China, people like Brazil, those are our colleagues in the BRICS. And in fact, when you look at what we're putting as proportion of GDP, it's comparable to what they're also putting. Yet they've managed to do more with the resources that they have put into their local system. So given that background, we as the CSIR decided to focus on, from a technology perspective, what is it that we can do to improve the healthcare delivery system? And the second focus area is, from that same perspective, what is it that we can do to reduce the impact of the burden of disease on the system as such, and perhaps in the long term, start to improve the life expectancy of the people? And I would not want to go into too many details, but we have scanned the environment. We have had many interactions with the Department of Health. We've spoken at length with the NHLS. We've looked into documents of the MRC, and as a matter of fact, we've met with Professor Tony Barry and his team in a consultative process in which we were saying the CSIR would like to come to the party in the arena of health. Where is it that we think we can support the system? The NHI is the subject of the moment. The Minister of Health and in fact the nation is working very, very hard towards putting into place the National Health Initiative that will ensure equitable and accessible health care to the broader majority of the people of South Africa. What is it that the CSIR can do to support that? And I would like to call upon my colleague at some point to speak to that a little bit more in discussion. But when we look at the healthcare delivery system, where people work in planning, coordinating health delivery, regulating, organizing, and monitoring progress of programs, the CSIR has got very, very strong competencies in our built environment, and in fact, those competencies in our defense space that can support logistics, the construction of accessible databases, and enterprise architecture. And enterprise architecture is something in the ICT space that provides a backbone in which databases can sit securely and information can be accessed securely to support the delivery of healthcare in terms of service providers, patients and their records and practitioners and so on and so forth. It's a big space and colleagues can speak more to. In terms of healthcare providers, professionals, practitioners and professional food, we can provide support in our ICT technology, with our ICT technologies and automated patient records perhaps, patient files, and perhaps coordinating databases with medical history and making them more accessible. There is potential for our technologies to work there. There is institutions like hospitals, particularly an institution that we want to highlight there is the NHLS, which provides testing support services to our public health system. 85%, I would like to believe, of all the tests and diagnostics and so on and so forth that happens in the public health arena is done by them. We could potentially support them, and we've been in discussions with them very intimately on logistics, which should improve turnaround time for when the samples are picked up, brought to their center, tested, and the information sent back to the doctor so that the diagnosis can be made. In terms of infrastructure, also patient files and therapy management. The question comes, in terms of society, individuals and communities, how can we bring in terms of the technologies that we have. In terms of the burden of disease itself, when people are trying to prevent disease and trying to deal with disease, we've got a focus on diagnosis. How can you bring technologies that the CSIR has in existence or are in a position to develop further to harness them towards any accurate detection of diseases that are relevant to South Africa? HIV, tuberculosis, increasingly diabetes, increasingly heart disease, and so on and so forth. We can develop point of care diagnostics that could potentially help in terms of e-health and m-health incorporated in application of ICT platforms to really bring healthcare further into communities through the handheld devices that in fact are quite prevalent in the communities in which people live. Providing communication platforms for population awareness, telemedicine and epidemiology. Affordable cures, this is very, very early work I have to emphasize. Looking at developing capacity to develop in locally generics, looking at devices and looking at drug delivery technology that can make drugs that exist right now perhaps more efficient and can assist in compliance. A TB medication that one has to take every day for a long period of time, can we package it in a manner that perhaps they have to take once every 2 weeks, which is easier to remember and perhaps something that could help in compliance. We are working with a center supported by DST that works specifically using nanotechnology to allow us to do those kinds of things. Looking at nutrition, we've worked on nutritional fortification. We're looking at initiatives now with other industrial partners like Nestle to say, how can we look at our resource base and develop novel, natural food ingredients that can improve well-being and wellness and in fact stave off disease before people get actually infected? These are the kinds of things that we've been looking at. And then this slide tries to really then say, how do we integrate the value chain of health? And what could the CSIR potentially do now? What I want to emphasize is this. The problem is articulated by that name. It's huge. And we don't pretend that we as the CSIR are going to fix the problem, because we cannot. All we are saying is what we can do for our part in terms of our mandate and in terms of the technology capabilities that we have to contribute to the solution of the problem. I think many, many parties have to come to the table to fix the problems that we have. But if you look at the value chain in its totality, in terms of producers of drugs and devices, we can support them in process development, drug delivery technologies, and prototypes of gadgets, prototypes of generic medicines, and so on and so forth. We can support wholesalers, group purchasing, whether it's for government or for the private sector, and distributors with logistics. IT support, but more importantly, technology evaluation. There are many, many technologies that have been developed in other parts of the world. And in fact, in many occasions, people have put out to tender requests for specific technologies. And the private sector obviously always comes to the party with solutions. But how does then government judge that in fact this technology is the most relevant? Because vendors out there have got multiple technologies. How can we support them in terms of an objective technology evaluation perspective to say actually maybe this technology is better than that other technology? And in fact, the other side of the story is that technologies are developed elsewhere for a certain setting. You bring them to the South African setting, they don't work as well because we require a step of technology adaptation. What can the CSIR do to make those technologies developed elsewhere be more adapted to the situation that is in our country? In terms of providers of healthcare, I've already spoken to IT, technology evaluation, logistics and infrastructure. Speaking to enterprise architecture and information security for the NHR, and so on and so forth. Examples of what we have done. So I've spoken a lot of the technology base from where we're coming. And the question you might be having in your mind that for all that capability and for all that muscle, what have you ever done that's actually of useful to the people? Which I think is of interest to people in this country. And the best example that I'd like to speak to is one that speaks to the science of tuberculosis. the flow of air within a facility to flow in such a manner that cause contamination between patients with normal TB and drug-resistant TB is minimized if they are within the same hospital block. But as well, airflow such that our healthcare professionals that work with the patient can also feel relatively protected in terms of the possibility to catch TB from the patient within the air. In this particular infrastructure we have developed, it was a collaboration between the Global Fund and the Department of Health in the CSIR. We demonstrated the principle, we built the infrastructure, and we demonstrated this particular technology. If you look at the map that is in front of you, that is the site of the model hospital for control of TB infection that we have across the country. Ours is not to implement everywhere. Ours is to demonstrate that this can be done. Harness the technology, demonstrate that it works, build the prototype, demonstrate the principle on a few sites, and perhaps the Department of Health can take this up and roll it out. You see the two hospitals that Desi View and one day in the Western Cape that are ring fenced in yellow, that's beyond what we've done now. Simply the Department of Health taking up that technology and continuing to roll out these facilities on the basis of our architectural design from scientists in our building, scientists and engineers in our building. In terms of the work that we're doing with health as well, we are working with the Department of Health very, very strongly, the Development Bank of South Africa and ourselves in a project, it's now in its second year or 5 years, that looks to say what are the known standards and guidelines that could be a benchmark for healthy facilities. If we go out there to say we're going to bring a new healthcare infrastructure or facility, to what standards should it conform? Our scientists are working with the Department of Health to develop those blueprints. That's why we have that thing that looks sort of like a plan. To develop blueprints that can be the basis of a basic standard to which new infrastructure in health should conform. So that's how we are supporting from a built environment. I've spoken a lot about bringing diagnosis closer to the people. And I'd like to speak now about maternal and child health and speak to a technology that we've been working on with the MRC, speaking now to the complementation and collaboration that exists between the two countries. One of the technologies that we've been working on is a technology that is called AmbiFlow. In an urban setting where people are more endowed with resources, people go for an ultrasound scan, pregnant mothers go as early as 12 weeks or even earlier. Doctor confirms that they are pregnant. They use the ultrasound scan to look at the baby over the course of the pregnancy and monitor its growth, monitor its health, monitor the mother's health. In rural settings, we cannot afford to have those big machines deployed with the community health workers that work on an everyday basis with the pregnant mother. A technology we have developed is what we're calling AmbiFlow. It's an ultrasound doppler technology that works in pretty much the same way that the big ultrasound scan that you find in advanced healthcare provision centers works. And we can use it to monitor at a very basic level the growth of the fetus. It monitors blood flow in the umbilical cord between mother and child, and it can determine as well the size of the baby. Now, you get small fetuses that are just small people, and small fetuses that are small because they are sick, there is a problem. What happens currently is that when they detect that the baby is small, they make a referral. And so there's so many referrals, including normal small babies, are also referred there, and they go to the doctor to congest the system. What this technology can do, it can distinguish between a baby that is, a fetus that is small because it's just a small person, and a fetus that is small because it is different. So therefore you can say it's small but everything is okay. This one is small and something is the matter. So we only refer only those pregnant mothers who have a problem to the centers where they can be assisted, assisting in decongesting the system. That's one technology. We are working on other point of care. In fact, before I move away from that technology, we're trying to really make next generation versions of the technology to be able to make the way that you buy the iPad, that you, some people these days, almost many of them, they have iPads and small gadgets. That's the level of technology that we're talking about. Can we extend it to monitoring cardiovascular disease? It's small, it's mobile, and it's potentially affordable to place with a community health worker so that they can start to monitor heart disease. They can also start to include a little bit more applications in terms of monitoring mother and child health, mother's blood pressure. Looking now to point of care diagnostics, there are many technologies that are really in their infancy. We've got technologies to improve diagnosis in TB, technologies to improve diagnosis in malaria and so on. But this particular technology is a base technology that is also based on a tablet, sort of like the thing that my colleague Claudina has, and it does a full blood count. And this is very interesting in the sense that in some of the areas where we have worked, people go to the clinic with a certain condition, and the nurse would like to understand what exactly is going on. The bloods are drawn, somebody comes on a motorbike, they come usually at a very fixed time in the day. All the blood is to be taken at that time and collected and sent to somewhere. And then you are told to go home and come back again a day or two or three later. So the poor person, they are sick already. They've gone in this area. They need to go home, still feeling sick because nobody quite knows yet what's wrong with them. They panic for bus fare or taxi fare, they go home. 3 days later, they come back again. And now they are told, these are your results and this is what's wrong with you, and therefore you can go and get better. This particular device, that is still, I would like to emphasize, under development. And now that you take a pinprick of a blood count, and at this time do a very, very basic blood count instantly, send the computer somewhere, and send the information into a cloud somewhere where the images are captured and translated into a full blood count. And it can tell you that perhaps the white blood count is rather high and perhaps you have this or that. And in fact, that image with email and telemedicine can be sent and transmitted in the future to a specialized practitioner who can already say, looking at this image, this could potentially be what's wrong with this person. And immediately communicate with the nurse and say, can you please give them A, B, or C, or D? So that slack of going home, coming back, and you're sick, and all of that could be really circumvented. We're trying to make it low cost, really less capital intensive, and lower skilled personnel at point of care should be able to use it. Those are the kinds of interventions that we're trying to put into play right now. And I've not mentioned, or I was speaking to my colleague Claudina, we've had some even less sophisticated technologies with the Amadram, where we're trying to really make clean water portable and be able to bring it to rural communities instead of the mothers, after a long day of hard work, having to carry the water. How do we make water more portable by making mobile Amadram devices that cut water closer to and a few of those. Now, one of the things, before I conclude, I just want to touch base very, very quickly to remind you of the six areas that we said we were in. And for the past few years, we've been working in an R&D translation mode, but more and more, we are beginning to feel the intense expectation of our people to say, we want you to work more towards implementation. We want to start to feel the impact a bit more of the work that we do. And to that end, we've selected in three of the areas that we work, what we're calling flagship initiatives, where we're going to really, really concentrate our manpower, concentrate our money, concentrate our time in trying to make a difference. And these areas are in water sustainability, in safety and security, looking at the burden of crime, and in health and nutrition. And I would like to quickly remind us of what the Minister of Health said in their budget was speech, and in fact what comes out very, very clearly in the National Development Plan, which is to say we need to re-engineer primary healthcare as the main mode of healthcare delivery from now and going into the future. We as the CSR are saying, how do we respond to that call that is coming through from the Minister of Health, that is coming through from the Standing Commission? And we're putting into place what we're calling our program on IDU primary healthcare, and putting together and harnessing all our technologies developed for different reasons really, to enable primary healthcare as the main mechanism of healthcare service delivery. We're responding directly to what the minister is saying or look at programs on health promotion, disease promotion, and diagnosis, using our systems of ICT, using our technologies in point of care. And one of the things that we think that we ought to work more with community healthcare practitioners is there is a very clear plan to deploy quite a huge number of community healthcare workers into the population to really support efforts in disease prevention, disease awareness, and in fact once we've got outbreaks and problems, a curative purpose, making sure that they've got access to medicines, making sure that they are referred to the places where they ought to go. We've got quite a lot of capabilities in terms of primary diagnosis, using computer platforms, broadband for all, BB for all, broadband for all, multimedia access, including video and radio as well, to provide access to community, to expert advice by community healthcare. Allow them to receive information on diseases that may be spreading, but as well, make them monitor to report back to a central place using such platforms. Diseases that are breaking and how fast they might be rolling out. You can imagine cholera, you can imagine influenza, and so on and so forth. In terms of a future clinic, how can we automate and improve diagnosis? How can we optimize logistics of samples that are collected, tested, and information brought to the decision makers and the doctors expeditiously? Mobile or electronic diagnosis with the technologies that we have there, I would not want to belabor the point. Once the people have been seen, medicine has been given, follow-up is usually necessary. Can we harness, using broadband for all and devices, these technologies to remind the patients to take care of their medicine, to remind the patients that perhaps it's time for them to come in. But I spoke already of a technology that tries to improve the efficacy of medicines that we have now by reducing the number of dosages that they have to take because they are packed more compactly and released more slowly through nanomedicine and nanogravity. Using technologies that were developed in our spatial planning as well as in our defense space, can we harness this information to provide a map of, in terms of primary health care, where are these facilities located? And can we somehow, using ICT, allow connectivity across such centers to a central space in support of the area? These are some of the examples of the kinds of things that we can do going into the future. And at this time, I really want to thank you for listening to my rather long presentation very patiently. And we'll back now to engage and interact with you through your chair on any questions or areas of clarity that you may have. And I would invite my colleagues then to respond as well. Thank you, Jane. Thank you, committee members.
Thank you. Thank you very much for that. They told me that they're going to see what they have been talking about.
Oh, I appreciate that.
But I don't think it's if you want to respond to questions as they come, because it will be different, maybe you can request that, but that's not usually do. Maybe we go with the way of you jot down the question.
Okay.
All
right. If that's what
helps,
that's good.
And then we'll go down.
Thank you very much,
Chester,
and thank you. For this presentation, my colleague who said she's very excited. Now I think this is the opposite. I'm so anxious. I'm really worried. And you will just understand why. I think this is proven. I don't want to be a guinea pig because this I can do. My problem is when you listen, yes, listening to it is very exciting.
Mm-hmm.
And now to the same, will it be implemented?
Mm-hmm.
Is another thing.
Mm-hmm.
That's what made me to be anxious. To be saying that I really want to know your relationship with the department. I know you have been talking to be saying that the way you talk, there is a relationship.
Mm-hmm.
But is that relationship really fruitful?
Mm-hmm.
Whatever you research and you put forward, because your work is to research and give us the results.
Mm-hmm.
And if that's where you end, you will tell me this is what I have researched and these are the results. How do you see to it or influence that whatever you have researched, beautiful as it is and as exciting as it may, is being cared for? Is it been done? More especially, we have been talking about the first world, the second world, and the third world. And I think where I come from, Kopizidi Sulea, where I come from,
mm-hmm.
next to the Apex World border,
mm-hmm.
in Buzwa, that is why I say I'm anxious. Whenever you are talking, if they are not yet there, in mathematics, when will they really reach that remote one room clinic in the city of Sudan? Or will they come like they, it has been happening, they come to Cape Town, Johannesburg, and they end there? And if, like, I have to enjoy them is when I'm visiting somebody in Johannesburg. When I'm sitting here, predominantly I'm from Northwest and predominantly is rural. And like not talking all these things, and this is somebody who supposed if the government afford to buy. There is this somebody who was trained long ago, the year where I was trained. How do you bring it me as an old nurse,
mm-hmm.
old sister who trained long ago in Barawan? How do you put me into the same page? And my following question will be how, when working with the Department of Health, how do you work with the training institution within health? Then another thing which I want to know. Maybe to add, I was really saying the visibility of CSIR in province and local provincial departments and local, not even because I'm in the national assembly at the provincial level and at the local level, because we are here, but the implementer, the people who are having money, the budget, the people who can afford are there. How do you get there? Or do you expect me confused as I am after your presentation to go and tell those people, so that how do you connect with people at the lower level? Thank you, Chairman.
Thank you. I suspect you remember to innovations can come because they've got challenges. The department is having challenges and they can't do that. But at the same time, innovations can come from somebody who just thinks about something that could help. Having seen a challenge, even without being told, but if you experience something, it can come from you as something that has been. But in addition to what Jeff was saying, you know, we always talk about rurality in South Africa, whether but we always forget that we've got two rural areas in South Africa. We've got organized rural areas, which are the farms, and they were surviving before 1994. And the rural areas where most of the Africans stay and actually relative. And what one sees, I think there's been a problem in Gauteng, Department of Health, with their budget. Partly there might be some mismanagement, I understand, but I think partly it's not really mismanagement. It's the fact that people are moving from rural areas to something, because that's where service is high. And now when we come up with these innovations, do we take into consideration what will happen to my village of Sino in 40 years to come? Will I still be having a village of Sino? Because there are houses that have been closed down, because people are taking Cape Town, they're taking Toronto, they don't want to go back there. Will we still have a thing of rural location in 40 years to come? Okay,
Mr. President.
Thank you.
the reason why I'm talking about window period, and I'm thinking of blood clotting, which also may infect one person from one person to the infection from one person to another through blood transfusion. So what are the time I don't know what to say.
there's a health thing about it, because there's a feeling that some people are using it. There's a fun, there's a control. So, okay, I'll come back to you. It was that another.
Like the summer, and those were for the best, and I
people for you to know what work that you do. For instance, once upon a time, GST has something to do at Delmas with some other council around the issue of water control. The next point, we've got a lot of problems with genetics these days, particularly kids born with this and that, and the latest was the child born with pectus and cervicus. Have you looked into the area of genetics and how best some of these issues can be addressed? Or what are the possible causes and how can they be prevented, probably from a community point of view or through various epidemiologies? And I think the last question that I have is around the issue of nanotechnology. 2006-07, DST was working on a nanodrug for TB that you were actually talking about that could be taken once a week. How far is that process? And also, you were talking around the issue of a kidney or something like that. Around those people have got problems with hemodialysis, then liver. Artificial liver, yes. How far is that progress? And the various activities that you have around health, like replacement of the family, how far is that program? Was it on the trial or it has advanced? If you could share that with us.
Thank you very much for this. She talked about the rest. If better I remember when we talked about this young girl running a nanotechnology, that when we try to look at, I don't think there's enough legislation. Maybe you can inform us whether there's enough legislation on things around the internet genetics in relation to that session, so that we, about the power part we can do. I asked you about this patient, like, when somebody becomes what happens to the human. And looking at what you're talking about, to us, the innovation, they end up being a business venture for somebody. Now, when you have discovered something, who do you give it to? And say, look, grant me this and make money about this particular thing. Where does it go? You are getting half a billion people. It's half a billion. And you have told us where you get other money. You know, the person who gets a fair share of what you're doing is the one who gives you the most money. Who do you really report to? Do you report to those? Because the total amount of money is more than a billion. So it means, are you reporting to those or reporting to one that who's the most important person that you give your information to, looking at the amount of money that you're giving? Can you follow me while you're looking at those?